Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to the Business Radio X Network with this very special edition from Seattle. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here in the studio with you. Lee, you ready to have this conversation?
I am. This is a subject that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, me too. And I want to learn more about it. And our guests may be surprised to learn and a little bit excited to learn. I've actually been reading about these topics a little bit lately, so I've really been looking forward to it. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast from With Pause and the Cove School, Miss Renee Meddy. How are you, Renee?
Good. I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Renee, can you share a little bit about With Pause? What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, I'm just helping people bring pause to their daily lives in a hopefully practical way that can help increase their focus and concentration, but also change the way they are in the world and the way they relate to people and relate to their experience. So I do a lot of training and development workshops or speak at conferences. And it's just been a lot of fun, especially seeing it come into the mainstream a little bit more now.
Now, how'd you get into this line of work?
Well, you know, it's an interesting journey as life is sometimes. I have a preschool and I was looking for something, curriculum or tools that they could use to help with some of their adult baggage when they got older. And so it was back in 2010, kind of right in the midst of the economic crash, right, and the real estate crash. And I had some close family and friends kind of going through some depression and anxiety. And I had these preschoolers who were so wide-eyed and curious and just lived life with a lot of wonder. And I thought, okay, what could I bring to them that will help them when they're adults so that they don't have as much baggage or they could handle their baggage a little better? And I came across mindfulness. And so it really started for me with curriculum, bringing this to children. And it wasn't until I went through my certification program, it was a 2.5 days of silence to kick off the Mindful Schools program. And I came out of that 2.5 days completely transformed. And so that's when I really began my own personal journey with mindfulness.
Now, can you share some maybe tips for a person that's just learning about this? Because I know for me, it's very difficult for me to stay quiet and be in the moment. My mind seems like it's racing. And then I spend a lot of energy, it seems, to try to get my mind to stop racing. Are there some strategies to kind of work through those beginning stages?
There are. And one thing I want to note is that our minds are racing, especially in this day and age with the amount of information we're producing and consuming. And at least for mindfulness meditation, it's not really about stopping or getting rid of the noise in our minds. It's about noticing our relationship to the noise and then being able to make that noise a little more background instead of foreground. And so there is a misconception that when we're practicing mindfulness, that we're kind of emptying our mind or getting rid of the thoughts that are consuming our mind. But it's really about noticing. So mindfulness, for me in a practical form, is just about noticing where your mind is, where your attention goes, and then being able to shift that attention. And so the practice of mindfulness, there are many ways you can practice mindfulness. You attend to your breath, you know, just noticing your breathing and being able to be okay with the stillness that mindfulness brings and the practice of stillness so that you can see where your mind is. And so breath is usually the first thing that people practice. And just seeing how long you can attend to your breathing. And when your mind wanders, as you're bringing your attention to your breath, it's about gently, without judgment, bringing your attention back to your breath. So it is important to know that your mind will wander. I spent the first 6 months thinking like, I'm never going to get this.
Like you're doing it wrong, right?
Right, exactly. And there is no right or wrong with mindfulness. It's about the moment that you notice that your mind has wandered and you gently bring it back is a moment of mindfulness. But it's also the moment that you notice you're also out of the present moment, right?
Right.
And now, so, yeah.
So when, like, just can you work me through this a little bit so the listener has an idea of when these thoughts, so I'm concentrating on my breathing. And when you say that, are you saying that I'm just repeating the word inhale, exhale, or am I just doing the act of inhaling and exhaling? Is there,
so you can do either. The practice takes forms in many ways. So for an example, if you want to take a moment right now, I can just walk you through
real
quick.
Fire away.
All right. So just find a posture that's comfortable for you, that feels relaxed, but alert.
All right.
And so if you're just sitting, and just see if you can bring your attention to your breathing. You're noticing your breath, your inhale and exhale. You're not trying to change it. You're just noticing.
Okay.
So you have your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And just noticing if it's really shallow or if it's deep breathing.
Well, again, see, those are terms like I read when I'm reading about it, but like what is shallow? What does deep mean? Like is shallow
one
or 2 seconds or is deep 8 or 9 seconds?
Yeah. Well, something a little easier because sometimes when that's difficult for people, I bring people into their body. So let's start with your body. Do you notice your heartbeat?
I don't notice it. I hope it's working properly.
Can you bring your attention to your heartbeat?
When you say bring my attention, just like feel my heartbeat or notice it more?
Feel your heartbeat notice it with your mind or bring your hand to your chest and see if you can actually feel the heartbeat.
Okay. I can feel my heartbeat.
And is it fast? Is it slow? Does it seem...
Again, these are to me relative terms. So, I mean, it feels normal.
Yeah.
So... I'm not noticing anything unusual.
Unusual. Okay. So if you can feel your heartbeat right now with your hand on your chest, see if you can just keep your attention, like keep noticing your heartbeat.
Okay.
And then let me know when something else pulls your attention away.
What happened was I was noticing it and then I was noticing my breathing slowing down.
Okay. There you go.
Bam, you did it. You fixed it. That's mindfulness.
Moment of mindfulness.
I know we're kind of kidding around, but we're kind of really doing a real exercise there. But for some people, I know me, I've paid attention to this subject for a while, and the terms seem very ambiguous. And it might be on purpose because, like you said earlier, there's lots of different ways to attack this and there's lots of different ways that people practice this. But for the lay person who isn't having an instructor over their shoulder, we're just going by what we're reading in a blog or watching on a YouTube, that some of it is contextual and subjective. And it's hard to know if you are in the ballpark because it seems like you mentioned earlier, like it took you 6 months to realize about your... their mind racing, that everybody goes at a different pace and people doing it, they might be doing it correctly the whole time.
Right, right. And again, there is no right or wrong. So I find the word noticing. So if you're, for some people, especially with minds that are racing constantly, like and I'm a type A personality, recovering perfectionist. So I was very much in this go, 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 and not noticing much. And what was interesting, when I came out of that silence, we continued for another 5 days in and out of silence and doing some workshops. But my family picked me up and I was in California and we were heading down the coast for vacation. And we were standing outside of this store in Petaluma, kind of like an antique shop. And there was one of those kind of old school, you put a quarter in it, the horse and it,
right.
Kids ride on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this like, because it was old rusted metal, there was this clicking noise. And I was standing there and I just started kind of like bouncing. And I said to my husband, oh, look, it's like music. And he looked at me like with this face, like, you would never have noticed that a week ago. You know, so there's so much that happens around us that we're just not paying attention to, especially if you're incredibly goal oriented or you've got a mission in life, you know, a vision and a mission in life that you're going after it. Right. And life is just passing us by. And there's so much about mindfulness and the moment and with practicing mindfulness, what I've come to appreciate are just kind of the things that are mundane in life, you know, feeling the breeze on your cheek when you walk out in the morning to start your day, or noticing the crispness in the air, or the color of a particular flower, or the color of the clothes that you put on. It's like, it's stuff that we don't pay attention to. So mindfulness is really about paying attention a particular way. And a big part of that is with curiosity and kindness. So many times we're so judgmental of the things that we do. Beginning a mindfulness practice, and our inner critic is like, I'm not doing this right. Or the things that we say to ourselves that aren't very gentle. And so it's, again, really about just noticing like, oh, look at how I just was beating up on myself for this particular project. And they call it a practice for a reason, because it's not something that, it's not a state that you get to, right? Like, oh, I'm mindful now. It's ongoing for the rest of your life. And what I love is Susan Kaiser Greenland, she works with a lot of children around mindfulness. And she made a distinction recently between little M mindfulness and capital M mindfulness. And little M is bringing awareness to any particular moment, any type of focus and concentration. So you can be mindful of washing the dishes. Now, typically when you're washing the dishes or doing something like that, at least for me, I'm washing the dishes, but my mind is elsewhere. I'm thinking about the next thing I'm going to do or a to-do list. We're being mindful of washing the dishes is really just being with the moment of the experience of washing dishes, feeling the plate in your hand, the soap suds, the warm water or the cold water, right? So that's small M mindfulness. You can be mindful of brushing your teeth. Capital M or big M mindfulness is a different way of being in the world. And I just love this distinction because you can practice mindfulness day to day. You can sit on a cushion, you can meditate to help bring qualities of mindfulness into your life. But when you don't take that insight that you learn from becoming aware and do something with it, for me, it kind of defeats the purpose. And so big M, capital M mindfulness is about the way we relate to our experience and the way we relate to the world. And so that for me was the biggest shift. When I brought a mindfulness practice into my life, is that I connected with people differently. I showed up differently. I related to my experience in a very different way.
Now, when you're working with children as opposed to adults, is there a difference? Because I would imagine each has their own challenges.
You know, they do. Children, I find, are more open and receptive. Especially with the young children I work with, they're already in the moment. And so part of it is just bringing awareness to the, you know, 3 to 5 year olds that they are in the moment. And typically as parents or teachers, we're always trying to get them out of the moment. You know, it's our challenge that they are so in the moment constantly. But what I realized recently with working with adults, because I never would have imagined that I would work with adults. Like, they, frankly, they scared me in terms of like facilitating anything with them, doing any type of training. But what I found with bringing mindfulness to adults is that they get the same look and experience as a child does when they're learning something new. Like, a child has this kind of awe and wonder about them, right? And I'm finding the same, like when there's an aha moment for an adult through mindfulness training or any workshops that I do and bringing some mindfulness into the training, to see that expression of a child come out through an adult for me is what's so rewarding. And that's kind of what's kept me passionate about working with adults and bringing this concept to them.
Now, when you're working when you're working with adults, are there certain professions that are more open to this?
It really is more individual, not necessarily professions, as it's becoming a little more mainstream, or there's more written about it, or people are learning more about it. That might change, but I think the approach is a little different when you're bringing it to people like in a service field. So whether it's educators or social workers, you can really tap into the feeling, the emotional intelligence side of things. But when you're bringing it to software developers or engineering, the approach talks more about the science behind it and the benefits and how the brain works and the neuroscience behind it. So you bring both into whichever side of the brain you're talking to, but it's depends on what you're highlighting for them and how to make that experience a little more relevant for them.
Can you talk about the emotional intelligence component? What does that mean, and how does that work in the workplace?
Yeah. So, a lot of education and growing up, depending on what generation, focused on IQ, right? How quote unquote smart you are, but really disregarded the EQ or the emotional side of things. And so the emotional intelligence, which was really brought to light by Daniel Goleman, talks about different areas, which a lot of what I bring attention to is self-awareness. And so once you can begin to kind of know yourself and know your strengths and your weaknesses, the ability to be a little more objective so you don't take things so personally is really helpful in the workplace. And so you start learning with emotional intelligence. It's a lot about how you're connecting with people, and it's a lot about relationships. And so when you begin noticing some things that kind of irritate you and how that impacts the decisions that you make, a lot of times that goes without being noticed. It's kind of an automatic thing. So you meet someone and there's something about that person that rubs you the wrong way, right? But it's not something that you're bringing a whole lot of attention to. So, thinking about hiring someone, you interview someone, their answers are pretty good, but there's just something about them that you're not quite sure. So you don't hire them. And so you're making this decision based on a personal assumption a lot of times, and it could be like, maybe the person you interviewed's name was Nancy, and there was a Nancy in grade school that you didn't like. And this is all happening unconsciously. And so often we move through life unconsciously. And so mindfulness really helps bring some consciousness to our decision-making and the way we interact with people. So the emotional mindfulness is a big part of emotional intelligence.
Now,
and then you can get to self-mastery. So
now with mindfulness and this, I guess, is the paradox here with it. It seems like you can bring mindfulness to the most mundane activity. Like you mentioned, washing the dishes, any activity can be elevated, when you sprinkle a little mindfulness into the mix.
Yes.
But, a lot of people try to schedule like, okay, at 8 a.m. is my mindfulness time that I've blocked out for myself. Is that a practical way to do this?
I mean, that's part of the practice. So yes, you would, you could schedule it. I usually like to practice sitting in the morning. I look at it like exercise. You're strengthening the muscle of awareness. You're strengthening your mental muscles, right? In order to do that, you need to practice it pretty regularly. And the more you practice, the stronger your mental muscles get. Then when there's a time where you need that muscle, it's more accessible. So in a difficult conversation, or when you're feeling incredibly a big feeling, whether it's excitement or sadness or frustration, you have access to that muscle because you've been practicing working it. So that's like a physical muscle, right? You work out several times a week, you're strengthening your arm muscles, and then you have to go pick up a heavy box. And you're able to do so with greater ease because you've been practicing or working out for weeks, months, years at a time. And so what's important about mindfulness too to note is that mindfulness, I think there's a lot of reading out there and articles out there about the benefits in the positive light. But mindfulness is about being with your experience, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. So you can get calm and have a greater sense of peace with mindfulness, but that's not necessarily the goal. The goal is to be, the intention of mindfulness is to be okay with any, the way it is. The moment that you're in an experience and you're wanting it to be something other than it is, you're out of being mindful. So to schedule the practice is really important so that you have access to it in your day to day. And that's similar to what I was saying before about, you know, it really does no good to become aware of certain things and then not do anything about it, not to be embodying the practice and bringing it into your day to day life. So for me, that's a really important part, is noticing what sets you off or noticing what you appreciate, and then in your day-to-day life bringing that in a different way. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that what you mentioned is an important component of it, is it's not just this joyous, beautiful moments that are happening. Oh, look at the beautiful sunset. It's, I'm very sad because this person's sick and I'm worried about them, and then feel
or this
that
person
feeling
really hurt
too.
Me.
Right.
Yeah.
And then some people try to use mindfulness maybe as a way to avoid some of that discomfort. But in actuality, you have to embrace all of the feelings, right?
Yes. Yeah. And what I found for me personally is that my capacity, I have an increased capacity to handle what's thrown my way. And this is interesting. So I've had a fairly steady practice, and I started a PhD program in the fall, and I was traveling quite a bit for work on top of it. And those two things together, of course, the practice would be most essential, right? With a lot going on, but similar to exercise, that's the first thing that falls off. And so my practice was a little more intermittent, and I struggled in the fall with I was completely frozen in terms of my PhD program and trying to write and the overwhelm I was feeling. And I've never really been frozen before in my life, and I'm very action oriented. And so in January, unrelated to that, I committed to making sure I sat every day for at least 15 minutes. And that was that my intention was daily, more so than length of time. You know, and that's similar to exercise, right? Where sometimes you're like, oh, I don't have time to work out, so you just don't do it.
Right.
I don't have time to sit. I'm not going to do it. So instead, I really committed to, even if it's only 5 minutes, even though my intention is 15, but if I only have 5 minutes, I'm going to strengthen that muscle to make sure it's a daily practice. And what's so interesting to me is how I handle my program now. When I find something really frustrating or overwhelming, I go right into the overwhelm and try and figure out actionable ways to do something instead of fleeing or freezing. And I believe from my experience, there's a direct correlation, because I've been sitting every day, that I'm able to do that. Like, I actually go into my stress with I'm just relating to it differently. Like, okay, what can I do? Just one step at a time, instead of like, oh, I can't get this assignment done, which means I won't be able to get the next assignment done.
Right. So instead of it spiraling out of control, you can stay in the moment with each element and explore that, and then let that kind of
which
free
then
that.
Brings me to action, which is like the antithesis of your stress. Like, you have to do something about it instead of keeping it all in your head and wondering what might happen.
And that's a, also a way to practice mindfulness, is to focus in on one kind of thing like that and use that as what you're concentrating on. And then maybe a solution will bubble up from that. It doesn't have to be repeating one word over and over. It could be,
no,
I got to work on this project and let me just concentrate on this project for 10 minutes straight and let's see where my mind goes.
Yeah. And when you practice the elements of mindfulness, you know, being mindful of your breath, or you can be mindful of walking, you can be mindful of sensations in your body, you can be mindful of your thoughts, like noticing when you're angry and just kind of noting, like, I'm feeling angry right now. So there's lots of different practices, and then I help people bring them into their daily life in a more practical way. So once you learn mindful walking, let's say, and I do this with both the preschoolers and with the adults, we'll do some practice around mindful walking, and there's a, you know, and you're standing, you're bringing all of your attention to the bottom of your feet, noticing how your feet feel on the ground, noticing each step that you take. And then to make that more practical, in our preschool, when children are sitting, say, at circle time and they're getting ready to head outside, not all the time, but sometimes we'll say, okay, let's use our mindful walking to move from this room to our cubbies to get our shoes.
Renee,
do mindful walking.
Renee, this is Stone, and I don't know, but I think I might have become a little bit more mindful as I've eavesdropped on the conversation you and Lee have been having. Before we wrap, a couple of things. In just a moment, I want to make sure that our listeners know where to go to learn more about you and your work, maybe have a conversation with you. So we'll get those coordinates in a moment. But I wanted to offer an observation from me, who, admittedly, complete novice, just interested in the topic, have thoroughly enjoyed kind of listening in on this conversation. You mentioned something earlier in the discussion about the big M, and you specifically talked about the way we relate to experiences and people. And I guess what came to mind for me, you know, I'm a business guy. I interview and work with a lot of business people. A great number of our listening community are business people. But what came shining through for me in that conversation, there's nothing soft about this at all. If I have mindful people on my team, if I challenge myself to be more mindful and be better in how I relate to experiences and people, whether I'm a salesperson, a manager, a service provider, I mean, I think that's going to have genuine bottom line impact. Would you agree with that conclusion?
Absolutely. You know, I surround myself with a lot of people in the field, and I go to a lot of conferences, and there's a lot of talk about the keeping the integrity of the practice and how people get to it, right? And so there's lots of apps, right? And for me, it's like, well, if there's an app that's tracking how you're meditating, or, you know, meditating or a mindfulness practice, and then especially for kids, there's like stickers or rewards. But for me, that's like the antithesis of mindfulness. But on the other hand, how people get to the practice, if they can end up sustaining it, you know, I'm starting to wonder, like, well, maybe there's a way, because there are so many different entry points to mindfulness and how people get to this work. And what I loved about, so I was just at the Wisdom 2.0 conference, which is the intersection of mindfulness and technology down in San Francisco. And one of the speakers, Mark Coleman, said, you know, this was kind of a question that came up in the audience. And he said, you trust in the goodness of the practice. So regardless of how people get there, if they're practicing, this is an inherent quality that will come out, is the relation to your experience. And that, I think, is going to have a huge impact, not only in the business world, but just in our world in general. That once we start recognizing, you know, our own place in a situation, in an experience, and how we're impacting that experience, and then we do something to shift our perspective there, I think that's going to have a massive impact on our world.
Extremely well said. Okay, we got to roll, but before we do, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you, have a conversation with you, learn more about your work. What's the best way for them to reach out? Email, LinkedIn, whatever's appropriate.
Yeah, I think my website is www.withpause.com. That's WITHPAUSE. And I love connecting with people. So LinkedIn is a great avenue for that. You can also find me on Instagram at withpause and Twitter at withpause and Facebook at withpause. So.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this afternoon. We'll look forward to following your work and learning more. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great. I appreciate it.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest today, Renee Mehdi, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on the Business Radio X Network, Seattle Edition.